Welcome to Sports Broadcasting Network. Today, I have a fellow photographer, and he could understand everything with me. So, what is your name?
Keith Johnston.
All right, Mr. Keith, where are you at?
I'm in Frisco, Texas. That's just north of Dallas.
All right. So, let's talk about a little bit about your history. Let's start with what did you used to do? Like, tell me a little bit of like your career and your career path and what you've been doing besides the photography side. Let's start with your career.
Well, I got a master's in business administration. I started working for a large technology consulting firm. Actually, at the time, it was a division of Arthur Andersen, which was the accounting firm that ultimately met its demise with Enron. But I'd left before then and worked for a few similar kinds of firms doing information technology consulting. And I did that for quite a number of years. And when that career finally wound down, I actually got a passion for leadership, and I started teaching leadership. And then along the lines, picked up my camera, which I had a camera in my hand since I was about 8 years old. In college, they used to call me Keith Kodak. But I got serious about sports. My dad was quite an athlete in high school in Canada, and he loved all sports. And so I kind of grew up with that same passion and played a lot of football in high school and college and did quite well.
All right, let's go back a little bit about your playing times. You know, first of all, film, because you said Kodak, and not a lot of people understand film, going from film to digital transition. How did you accept it? Because that, for me, it was, I love film because you knew how, you had to be a photographer to really understand what it was. Now, everybody that has a digital camera, hey, I'm a photographer. How was your transition? I mean, I was like a love hate with it, but how do you feel about it now?
Well, I didn't shoot a lot in the 90s, but in 2000, I think it was 2003, I made a trip back to Canada, my alma mater, McMaster University, for their opening game of the season on Labor Day. And I built a relationship with the athletic director at McMaster, so she let me down on the field. And I had my film camera and I think a 300 millimeter 5.6 or 4.0 lens. It wasn't, you know, a fast lens at all. But it was interesting because as I was loading my film in before going to the game, I was at a friend's house, the canister that held the batteries broke. And I was able to tape it all back together again. But I'm amazed because I think I had a roll of 36 pictures on my film. So for the whole game, I took 36 pictures. I'll go to a football game now and I'll take 1,000 pictures.
Yeah.
And people can't comprehend that. But I will take at least 1,000 pictures at a football game nowadays. So the transition was, my camera was pretty much broken. And so I picked up a digital, you know, bought a digital camera and started shooting digital.
Okay. Well, okay. Here's a famous thing, the famous brand. Are you biased to one brand, like, you know, Canon, Nikon, Sony, Lumix, you know, or you're open to any camera? That's another, you know, bodies and cameras, because, you know, every camera, every lens has a different, you know, color and different feel. Yeah. On. But what is your preference?
My preference is Canon. I got that way. I started with Nikon, but as I started going to these games and the college games, the professional games, all the other photographers were shooting with Canon. And I asked one of the other photographers, I mean, not all of them, but most of them. And I asked one of the other photographers why. And they said, well, because they've got the best support. And if you're in a sports environment, you get run into, you're in the rain, you're all those different kinds of things can happen to your camera. And so having a good support system. So I switched to Canon and I've been there ever since.
Yeah, I do all of them, but Canon is one of my favorites. I had the Canon professional services, you know, that we do. You know, and I had the platinum level. Something happens, you send it in 3 days later, yeah. You know,
that's
and they
right.
Can't fix it. I mean, that's what I love about Canon, you know, and Sony's been doing pretty good with that too. Nikon, I mean, I use all of them. You know, I'm biased. I mean, I have on one side, I got a Canon, and the next side, I have Nikon. I have four cameras on me, you know, I have the straps and the press up. And, you know, I do agree with you having thousands and thousands of photos. All right, let's go back into your playing days. You know, you said you play sports, you know, according to your bio. So tell me about your sport playing, because you have a book also. So tell me a little bit about.
I was small for my position. I was an offensive lineman in high school, and I think my most ever weight in high school was 160 pounds. So I went to a very small college about 60 miles north of Dallas, Austin College. And I beefed up to 185 pounds. And early in the first year, I made the starting team and started all four years as an offensive guard. One year we were ranked sixth in the nation in the small college polls. My senior year, I was captain, selected all Texas college. Being Canadian, after I graduated, I was able to go to graduate school in Canada. I went to McMaster University, and in Canada, they give you 5 years of college eligibility. So I was able to play an extra year of football. Players were a lot bigger up there. I mean, the tackle beside me was 6'6 and 260. The other guard, I was an offensive guard, was 6'3 and 240, and I was 5'9 and 195. But I was selected first team All-Canadian. And that was the very first All-Canadian team, college All-Canadian team.
Wow, congrats.
Which led to the book. You know, 50 years later, I'm thinking, whatever happened to the other 23 guys that were on that team? So I did a lot of research and found all living members of that team. There were three that had passed away. And I wrote their stories about how they got into football, what were their memories, and what they did with their life afterwards. And so it was quite a fun project. I found the one picture of me. That's me back in the background there that I put on the cover. So that was quite a thrill. And then a few years after I started my career in consulting, I saw an ad on TV to referee football. And so I responded to the ad and spent 27 years on a football field officiating high school football in Texas, which was quite a thrill.
Let's talk about, sorry to interrupt you. Let's talk about that real quick. Referee, and you're playing, and you know, people do not like referees, especially making call. Parents are like, you know, parents are the coaches. You know, I say this, you know, you watch from both sides, you know, it doesn't matter if you're home or away, and you're like, it's like needles out there, because you think if you call the wrong one, you make sure they don't know what car you're driving, because I've heard about it. You know, I've seen photos where they take a referee's car and they do stuff to it. What is one of the challenges on that? What was the hardest part of that part?
Letting the comments kind of roll off your back like water on a duck's back. You know, you're going to get them. You know, sometimes, you know, it's interesting, the psychology of coaches. There are some coaches that really are nice to you, and they know that if they're really nice to you, they're probably going to get a good call now and again. But there are other coaches take just the opposite approach, and everything you do is wrong, and they just can't screaming at you, and the fans are screaming at you. And I remember one junior varsity game. We do junior varsity games on a Thursday afternoon and go out, and usually you do it with three referees, and I was the only one that showed up that day. And I remember at halftime that the varsity coach for one of the teams came over with one of the assistants, and he was just furious, and he was calling out, well, why'd you miss this, and what'd you do wrong, you did that wrong, and you're obviously biased, you know, towards the other team. And it was just, you know, you just spent the whole halftime tearing me apart. And I thought, you know, I'm the only guy out there. You know, I don't have anybody else. It's hard to see everything on the field. But it was a lot of fun.
The referees, I see you guys running a lot, man. You guys are running as sometimes more than football players. You have to catch everything, run back and forth, you know. You know, I personally, I'm 48. I don't know what your age is, but how young are you right now?
I'm 75.
Okay, and you still referee?
Oh, no, I don't referee anymore. No, I checked it in a few years ago. I did. The last game I refereed is when I quit, 2005, I think. I moved to Canada in 2009, and I started coaching, and went to one game, and they were short an official. So my head coach said, you used to officiate, why don't you get on the field? So I did. A little bit slower, a little bit older, still remember the rules. Tried to keep up with the rules as long as I could.
Yeah. Now let's talk about a little bit about, this is a magical question I ask you, everybody. What do you feel about AI now? You know, artificial intelligence, because you were in the technology field before, about AI in sports. You know, we've seen this being used a lot more, you know, using for analyticals and all this stuff. It's like, I feel like it's good and bad. Good because giving the coaches the extra thing that they need, the information. Bad because now everything about a player is, you, you, it's not like you get a player, you see the passion, you have this machine to, okay, this person might be good for the draft and all that. Why think about that? I mean, I personally miss the days where, okay, they went to a field, they sat down, they scouted somebody, and they look at that person. Then what I'm seeing is that they're using photographers and also videographers to record somebody, feed it into a system, an AI, and AI says, well, this player might be have this outcome, this player might have an injury. What do you think about that?
I haven't given that a lot of thought, Alex. That particular aspect of it, AI in general, I play a lot with AI and creating images, and it does a horrible job of creating athletic images. You came up with a guy with three arms and four legs and all that kind of stuff. So I said, well, I guess there's still an opportunity for me out there with my real life photography. As far as another aspect of AI that, AI, if it doesn't know an answer, it's going to make stuff up. One of the things I did when ChatGPT first came out is I said, oh, I wonder how smart AI is. And I put a question in about the team I played on in college. And I said, tell me a little bit about the 1968 team at Austin College. And it came back with a bunch of phony stuff, the players' names. It said we played Texas Tech University, which, never would have happened in a million years. And it made all this stuff up. And the thing that AI and films and whatever I'm going to tell you about a player is his heart. And that's one thing that my high school coach always said. He wished he had all the team had the heart that I had. He told me that I would have been first team all city in Dallas if I weighed 175 pounds. But just you don't get that aspect. And I guess you can tell it to some extent how hard they work and so on. But there's so many intangibles, I guess, that are hard to evaluate with a computer system. That's my
Yeah.
feeling.
All right. Let's go back into photography. I'm
Okay.
bouncing everywhere because it's because it goes back and forth. It's kind
Oh
of like a
yeah.
conversation, So with photography, and people are just saying, let's talk about the truth behind sports photography. We saw recently the Olympics are going on, and you see on TV, you see all these photographers clack, 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 shooting. Like you say, you could do 1,000 shots,
Yeah.
You talk about, and you could have, for a whole week, 20, 30,000 shots, I personally take a little book with me, and if I see a shot that I like, I write my number on it, I go back and I edit. But still, you talk about thousands and thousands of photos. You could have Lightroom, Photoshop, Corel, all these things, but to edit from those thousands, then you pick, you submit them, you put them on this website, right? The truth of what photography, sports photography is, you could put 500 photos up and make probably $200 max. And that is on a good day. I don't know about you. And people are saying we spend upwards of 10, 15, 20, the professional photographers like yourself and myself have spent a lot of money in our gear. Let's talk about the truth of the earnings that you could get. Yes, there are, you could, you're sponsored and all that. You get to travel. But the truth behind it is the editing time, and people don't take accountability, the your car, your gas, your clothing, your flight, your food, your hotel, most of the time it's not even covered. But we do it because we have a passion. So let's talk about you, your experience. You were, I found you on a stock website, Let's talk about the truth behind that.
I mean, I don't do photography to make money. Not in my age. I'm retired. I do it for fun. I shoot primarily for Referee magazine, but occasionally I run across, a kid on the field, and I run into his parents in the stand. I said, "Give me your email address, and I'll email you some pictures." And that's the passion of it. When I first got into it, I did a lot of Little League, and before everybody had the phones, And I teamed up with some other photographers, which people said, well, they're your competition. I said, no, we teamed up. You do a tournament, you got 40 teams there, games going all the time. And made a little bit of money. You'd make $700 to $800 in a day sometimes, but we had a printer out there back then, and they could look at the picture online, we'd print it off and sell it to them for $10 or something like that. When I shot for a newspaper in Houston, it was a local newspaper. They had about 100,000 distribution. But it was a kind of a neighborhood paper that served several neighborhoods. And they paid me every time I went out, at least for the first couple of years. So if I went to a game, I'd charge them, for the pictures I sent them. And And they quit doing that after a while, but they'd sometimes use six or seven of my pictures in one edition. And so that made, you know, put a little bit of money in my pocket. I can't remember even how much they paid me. And then Referee Magazine, you know, because I refereed, I said, you know, I looked at the magazine. I said, you know, I've got some pictures that good. So I started sending my pictures to Referee Magazine. And back then they'd say, if they published one, they'd send me $25. Nowadays it's $40. A cover picture back then was 100. I think it's probably closer to 150 now. I've had six of my pictures on the cover. One just a couple of weeks ago, which was kind of fun because I went through a gap while I was in Canada where I wasn't submitting any. But I don't do it for the money. It's really hard to make money. You know, when I put all those pictures out on Pixabay, probably 1,200 pictures in a year and a half, and I've probably gotten $100.
Yeah. Yeah, people think that, you know, oh, well, you make a lot of money, photographer. Man, you know, I mean, yeah, granted, we do it for the passion. The you know, you hear that click. It's like and now with the mirrorless, you don't hear that click no more. I still like my DSLR. I have a 5D, which I love. That is my baby. But, you know, with the Sony, I don't hear that click no more. And nothing more faster when you're going click, 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 click. It's like almost like nonstop and you're following somebody, you know. It's like, I love it. I love it. I miss it. You know, I love the film days because I hear the loading and new. But now, let's say the biggest competition all photographers have is the cell phones. The cell phones are getting better. 50 megapixel cell phones. I mean, yeah. I use it as a backup. When I do journalism, I have two cell phones in my pocket as a backup for my camera. My camera goes down. And you're talking about, you know, a 16 by 20, perfect, 200 megapixels, like, you know?
Yeah.
And it's waterproof, you know? So
I got to tell you one quick thing. You know, my wife, you know, I'll go to a game. And if it's a local game, I'll be gone 2 or 3 hours. But sometimes I go to Austin College game, and that's an hour away. So I'm driving an hour there, driving an hour back. I spend 3 hours at the game. I get home, and my wife goes, oh, no. Because she knows I'll spend 4 or 5 hours editing those pictures. And I'll do that so I can send, you know, 20 pictures to Referee Magazine and a few pictures up to the college, and maybe I'll get $40 out of it.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Don't people understand? And then, you know, we do it because of the passion.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, you know, what magazine is, what publication is, and you can have countless views and be, you know, like on Getty Images right now. They had a picture of Miss Biles on coming off the platform. Amazing. I mean, this girl had that. Yeah, this person got views. They might make some money on it. But yeah, well, this person's known. Now they put it in the portfolio. They don't take the time to really see, hey, who is that photographer? Who's the person that caught that?
Yeah.
You know, hopefully with this podcast, we could bring a light into this because it is something that's a topic that not just from a photographer's point of view, but these coaches and these teams can understand, you know, these people are out here photographing. Without us, they're not, you know, they might have a good shot from a cell phone, but to see that sweat coming off a player or using a shot they might meet, like with you, referee might call, hey, you know, the ball in or ball out might be a game-winning shot.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things right now, and I think that, you know, they need to, are these pay, you know, hey, let's pay them $50, $100, you know, let's get, you know, and yes, parents out there, please go to online and buy the photos from those, you know, for the photographers.
Yeah.
No matter who it is, buy those photos, you know, and it helps out. So if you could change something, okay, in photography, in the sports industry, you know, besides getting paid, of course, how hard is it to get credentials? Because we were talking about this earlier. Credentials is one of the hardest things to get, you know, because of all these things coming up with social media platform, all these influencers. Don't get me wrong, I love influencers, one myself. But how hard is it to get credentials with so many years? So let's talk about that.
It's very difficult, and it's getting more difficult because the schools are more concerned about safety and getting sued and things like that. You know, and I guess at one time there were a lot of parents on the sidelines and they had to cut that out. So getting credentials is difficult. I got lucky. I guess there's a lot of different ways. You know, at Austin College, I knew the athletic director. I said, hey, I want to come up and shoot some pictures. I knew the athletic director at McMaster. I said in my bio, you know, one of the biggest thrills was the Canadian Championship College game in 2011 that my alma mater played in. And I called the school to say, hey, you know, I was first all Canadian. I'm a photographer. Can you get me credentials for the sidelines? Oh, no. We've hired a professional photographer from Hamilton. We're going to fly him to Vancouver. You know, we don't need any extra help. And so I called Referee Magazine, and they've always been very supportive. And they said, "Sure, we'll get you credentials." And the interesting part of that story, a year later, I went to McMaster to a practice they were having, and one of the coaches came up to me and he says, "I understand you got a lot of pictures at the national championship game. How many pictures did you get?" And I said, "I took about 700 pictures." He says, "700? We paid a photographer. We paid his flight to Vancouver, which is 3,000-mile flight, and he gave us 150 pictures. We kept asking him where are the rest." I said, "Well, you can have as many of mine as you want." And he was, just blown away. But it's hard to get credentials, and I got lucky. The newspaper that I referred to earlier, I called them up and I said, "Hey, I'm taking a lot of pictures in the neighborhood of Little League and whatever." I sent them some pictures. And they went, "Wow, we love your pictures. Can you start shooting more games for us?" They gave me pictures to Rice University. They gave me pictures to Texans football. They gave me, I actually got into the Houston Rockets through Referee Magazine. They called me up one time and they wanted to do a special on a particular referee who was getting close to retirement. And that was the year Yao Ming was playing. So I'm down on the court with, Yao Ming there and a 5'6" referee that I'm trying to get pictures of standing next to 7'4" Yao Ming. And, but, the people, I when I moved back to Texas, I called the high school and I said, "I'd like to shoot games." They said, "Well, you need credentials." And they gave me a really tough time. And I said, "Well, I shoot for Referee." I didn't have the newspaper connection anymore. And I said, "I shoot for Referee Magazine." And said, "Okay, well, if you can get them to send us a letter, then, we might let you on the field." But the schools are concerned about safety. They don't want a lot of parents on the sideline that don't know what they're doing, and players running into them, which is another challenge. Football, basketball, soccer, you're on the sideline, you could get run into. You need to watch out. I've never been around to do, but I got real close one time.
Yeah, I lost some gears. I was doing some NFL games and I got to kick off and they're running now, like trying to move it. You can't. And they changed the way it was. I love doing stuff like that. The credentials, like I say, it is hard. Not to say the school of safeties and all that. I'm lucky to be able to, because of what we own, I'm able to get on there, but it's hard, And now, before you used to go, for example, MLB and the NFL, they had one thing for everything. Now you have to go through every single team, which is different. Like, before, you used to go apply and that was it. You were part of a newspaper, that was it. Now they do all this like stance of it, which I understand. I mean, safety is a big concern, but here's a photographer, And I have, international press credentials, and they're like, "Hey, here I am. I'm an editor." Da, da, da. They don't care no more.
No, they
But
don't
now,
care.
but here's somebody that says, "Oh, I'm a social influencer. I got 200 million views." Oh, come on, here, come on. It's like, and it's like really, it's because I understand where they're going with the media and all that. So there's always a double-edged sword with that. If you give somebody a tip, let's say somebody young that wants to get into sports photography or refereeing or something, what advice would you give them?
Well, I guess, get out and there are venues where you can, you don't need credentials. You can go to a little league field. I can go to some high school games, and it's interesting at a high school or any competition, the home team thinks you're with the other team, and so they're not going to question you. Yeah, my daughter's out there playing or my son's out there playing, so they don't question you. So you can get into some venues and just start taking pictures and developing your skill. And then get the best of them and submit them to a newspaper or some media outlet that's going to publish them, that can get you the credentials, that can help you move on up. As far as making money, frankly, Alex, I'm not sure. Back when I started, I told you I did the Little League tournaments and things like that, and actually I did a powerlifting tournament. I think that was the first time I did a tournament of powerlifting, and I made about $700. And I went in, and all these girls and boys were lifting weights, and nobody ever took their pictures before. And I got a lot of great pictures and printed them off right there on site. And you don't do that anymore. And of course, all the parents have their cameras, their cell phones, and they think they can get as good a picture as you can. So you need some way to show them the kind of pictures you can get, to show them that they're so much better than what they can get, and then. Some people appreciate great photography. There are a lot of people that don't. and they can look at your best picture and go, cool picture, So it's finding the market, finding, like you said, nowadays you can post them to your website, and the coach or the athletic director will get the parents to go out there and buy the pictures. And I think I did that for a while, and people can make money that way too. And but get the exposure, get on the field, practice. I tell people, they said, what's the secret to good sports? And I says, knowing the game and anticipating what's going to happen. If it's a football game and it's a punt, I'm going to be downfield where unless I want to picture the kicker, I'm going to be downfield where the guy is catching the ball. But it's positioning yourself in anticipation of the kind of events. If there's a guy on third base, I'm going to be focusing on home plate because there's going to be a good play on home plate. If he slides in or something like that, that's where I'm going to be focusing. Or I'll get down the first baseline and get him running towards first base to get a good play at first. So, following the game, understanding the game, and you get that through experience. Getting out there, shooting a lot, start with little league kids, move on up, but get the experience, get the exposure, get the pictures out there, start seeing what people like.
Yeah. Okay, Mr. Johnson. One last question, then we'll close off. If you could photograph, your perfect team, what would it be? It could be national, it could be local, it could be global, or one sport or one person. If you could photograph that one player or a team or the perfect stadium, what would that be and why?
I guess with my passion of football, it'd have to be football. And I've known of a few. I was an offensive lineman, so getting to photograph an all-pro offensive lineman would be a real quick. I grew up in Dallas after my family moved down here from Canada, so I grew up watching the Cowboys. And I got to tell you a very quick story. I was watching the Cowboys back in the late 60s and early 70s, and one of their stars, all pro, was a guy named Bob Lilly. And he was a defensive tackle. And many years later, I think it was 2005, 2006, I was at a photography conference in San Antonio, Texas, and there was Bob Lilly. And I read later that he had been a photographer. In fact, I just bought his book that he published, 40 years ago, the pictures he took when he was playing of the other players and whatever. And I found an old copy online. But he was a passionate photographer from very early on. So there I am. He's 6 foot 4. I'm 5 foot 9, and nice guy. And that was one of the biggest thrills I had was talking to Bob Lilly, who was an all-pro defensive tackle for the Cowboys when they won the Super Bowl and that. So I guess professional, I had only photographed two or three professional football games. So getting an all-pro offensive lineman, I guess, would be a real kick.
The real dream. Yeah. It's nice to, when you meet somebody that you look into as far as meeting them, photographing them and talking to them, the fact that they're doing the same thing. I personally was a Dallas fan, still am. I like the Bay. I was on the sideline back in the days when it was Aikman, Smith, and all them out there, that I was there with I can't say the name of the company, I have an NDA. I was there photographing and doing the first cameras that flew in. The cross cameras. So I was part of there. So I was part of that team. It was interesting, see the Super Bowl and the fans and the cheering. And you understand when you're sitting there and you have all these fans and you hear the crowd. It's just so, and it's not just if you're sitting in one seat and one part of it, you hear it. But when you're down in the line and you're hearing everybody scream and holler and the applause and it's just so, especially during the Super Bowl, it was just mind blowing. That's one of the most crazy experience I've ever experienced. But okay, anything else you want to add? So how can we find your book, the name of your book, and how can we find it? I know it's on Amazon. So let me know the name of your book.
The name of the book is called It's The End Comes Quick, Lessons Live On.
Okay.
I gave it that name because football is probably one of the few sports where when it's over, it's over. There are people in their 50s and 60s playing hockey, playing basketball. Football, no, it's over. And it's probably got a limited audience, but some people have enjoyed it, reading stories about how people got into football and achieved success in football and everything like that. So it's a story of the 24 of us that were selected to the first All-Canada football team. I actually have one other book.
Yeah, I saw that one. And tell me about that one.
Called A Garage Full of Ferraris. And I mentioned earlier that I had a passion on leadership. And so about almost 10 years ago, I decided I was going to write a book about leadership. And I contacted 14 or 15 people that I'd either worked with or worked for that I respected their leadership. And they, everything from a college president of Austin College to a guy that ran a construction company in Houston, Texas, that I really respected their leadership. And I interviewed them and asked them a lot the same questions and wrote a book about leadership. And I call it A Garage Full of Ferraris. And that gets into a story that I talk about in the book about a client that one time referenced A Garage Full of Ferraris. And I thought it really applied to leadership. So that's my other book. Both of them available on Amazon. It was more, you know, it's almost like photography. It was more fun doing this and doing that rather than making any money with it. I think every one of the men that I mentioned in this book bought a copy or two or three.
Well, I think, you know, we have a lot of people listening to this podcast. So hopefully we'll be able, you know, I think I'm going to put you on the other podcast called People Changing the World. And we'll talk about The Garage Full of Ferrari because, you know, what was your experience and all the changes you went through in your life, playing ball, being a referee, photographer. You know, a lot of people think that with that book, you'll be able to influence, you know, your story is so compelling and everything you inspiring, you know, from, hey, I was a little guy playing ball, you know, to now with the camera, you know, saying some stuff. So I think we'll be able to put you on that podcast too. All right, Mr. Johnson, anything else you want to add before we leave?
No, Alex, I've enjoyed this. I enjoyed visiting with you. I love talking about photography. And so this was a great opportunity. And I thank you for the opportunity. This has been fun.